The C-141 landed at Pope Air Force Base, North Carolina, ending a routine flight that had originated over 8,000 miles away. Its cargo, Americans. In most previous wars, Americans had lain close to where they fell. Not so for Vietnam. It was as though no American wanted to remain there, living or dead. And every recovered body came home, processed outside Saigon, and again, here. The men who worked here were not above grim jokes. The smell alone was enough to keep the casual observer away. One body, that of Specialist Fourth Class Dwayne Kendall, bore numerous wounds to the torso. The civilian mortician bent over the body, examining the wounds. He lifted his head to make sure that the uniformed officer was on the other side of the room. Then he pulled a thread from the stitches made by another mortician at the other end of the pipeline. The stitches came undone, allowing him to reach into the body cavity and remove four clear plastic envelopes of white powder, which he quickly put into his bag before reclosing the gaping hole in Dwayne Kendall's body. It was his third such recovery of the day. On his way home, the mortician stopped at a supermarket and dropped some coins into a public phone.
Yeah,
Henry Tucker said, picking it up on the first ring. 8, the phone clicked off.
Good,
Tucker said, putting the receiver down. 8 from this one, 7 from his other man. Things could pick up rapidly now that he was getting his distribution problems in hand. With a little luck, he could take over the entire East Coast heroin market for as long as Americans continued to die in Vietnam. It was also time, he told himself, to plan for the peace that would probably break out someday. In the meantime, he needed to find a way to expand his distribution network. One thing at a time. It was after dark when Kelly tied Springer up. The house seemed emptier than before. For the second time in a year, the rooms automatically larger without a second person to help occupy the space. He found himself staring at Pam's clothes. There was so little of it. The cutoffs, the halter, a few more intimate things, the flannel shirt she'd worn. So little to remember her by. How long had it all lasted? 3 weeks? Was that all? Life could be so cruel, and memory could be a curse. In the silence, he could hear her, but the smells were gone, and her feel was gone. It was then that Kelly began sobbing for the first time since he'd learned of her death. Alone, he called out her name, hoping that somewhere she might hear, and somehow she might forgive him for killing her with his stupidity. Kelly lay back in the bed, staring at the ceiling. If his pride could kill, then so could theirs. Dutch Maxwell arrived at his office at 6:15, as was his custom. He sorted through his pile of daily paperwork, looking over the day ahead. Admiral Podolsky entered, nodded to his friend. "Got the call from Pax River," he said. "Your friend may be back home. His boat's at the dock, anyway."
"Let's move on it."
"No sense rushing it," Podolsky replied. "He's a civilian, right? Probably sleeps till 9 or 10. Maxwell grunted.
"That must be nice. I'll have to try it sometime."
5 miles can be a long walk. It is always a long swim. It was an especially long swim alone and for the first time in weeks. That fact became clear to Kelly before the halfway point. But he didn't stop, didn't allow himself to slacken off. At last, he touched the sandbar of Battery Island and forced himself to stand and walk.
"Over here, Chief."
Kelly turned and saw the undressed whites of a very senior naval officer exiting a helicopter which had just landed. "Admiral Maxwell." Kelly was glad for the company, especially this man. Maxwell came up and shook his hand.
"We've been calling here for a couple of days. Where the hell were you?"
He was surprised at the instant change in the boy's face.
"Why don't you go get washed off?" Maxwell suggested.
It was then that Maxwell saw the recent scars on Kelly's back and neck. Jesus. Their first meeting had been aboard USS Kitty Hawk, 3 years earlier when Kelly was a bosun's mate first class. Kelly had gone in to rescue the flight crew of Nova 1-1, whose pilot had been Lieutenant Junior Grade Winslow Holland Maxwell III, United States Navy. 2 days of crawling about in an area too hot for a rescue helicopter, he'd come out with Dutch III, injured, but alive. And how? Maxwell still asked himself, how did you thank a man for saving your only son? He'd been with Kelly for the telegram announcing the death of Kelly's father, a firefighter who'd had a heart attack on the job. And now he realized he'd arrived just after something else. Kelly returned from his shower.
That mess on your shoulder is new, Maxwell commented. What happened to you?
Kelly told his story briefly, and Dutch Maxwell sat and listened like the surrogate father he had become.
That's a hard hit, John, the Admiral observed quietly.
Yes, sir. He took a deep breath. So, what brings you out here, sir?
I want to go over something with you. Maxwell opened his portfolio and unfolded a map.
The younger man grunted. Oh, yeah. I remember that place.
Classified information here, sir. Chief, what we're going to talk about is very sensitive.
Kelly saw that Maxwell was alone, without the usual covey of aides hovering. That was most unusual.
Why me, sir? You're the only person in the country who's seen this area from ground level.
And if we're smart, we'll keep it that way.
The objective is here.
Maxwell's finger tapped a spot up a long river devoid of bridges or roads. That's a long way to swim, sir.
What is it? You still have top secret clearance, Maxwell stated. This stuff is higher than TS, John.
And Maxwell explained why, pulling additional items from his portfolio. Those motherfuckers. Kelly looked up from the recon photo. You want to go in and get them out, like Song Tae.
At Song Tae, nobody was home when we got there. This guy, Maxwell tapped the photo, is positively ID'd as an Air Force colonel. We want your information to help look at alternatives.
Kelly thought back. This is a tough one, sir.
Nobody ever said it was going to be easy.
If you loop around here, he began tracing possible routes through the topography, his mind going back to the 50 hellish hours he'd spent there. And now this flag officer was asking him how to risk the lives of other men in the same place, trusting him, much as Pam had. To know what to do, the thought chilled the retired chief bosun's mate.
You say they won't come back unless we get them. No other reason for them to set this place up in the way they did, Maxwell replied. They've already reported them dead.
Admiral, I'm just an enlisted guy, remember?
You're the only person who's been close to the place. You turned down officers' candidate school 3 times. I'd like to know why, John.
You want the truth? It would have meant going back. I pushed my luck enough. Maxwell accepted that. How do I get in touch, sir?
Maxwell dropped a Pentagon pass on the table. No phones, no mail. It's all face-to-face contact.
Kelly stood and walked him out to the helicopter. He grabbed the Admiral's arm as the rotor started turning.
Was the Song Tae job burned?
That stopped Maxwell cold.
Why do you ask?
Kelly nodded. You just answered my question, Admiral.
We're not sure, Chief.
Maxwell got into the back of the helicopter. As it lifted off, he found himself wishing again that Kelly had taken the invitation to officer candidate school. The lad was smarter than he'd realized. He wondered what Kelly would do when they formally recalled him to active duty. But maybe Kelly needed the distraction from his personal troubles. The Admiral consoled himself with that thought.